of what people in Occupy were asking for was things like higher taxes for the corporations and for the rich, which higher taxes means more government. So in a way, yeah. That, you know, anyway, that, you know, the Occupy movement had people who were kind of more traditional liberals. It had people who were anarchists.
there was a wide variety of people.
Ron Paul libertarian yeah. type people there. So I think that was one of the things that was interesting about the Occupy movement was that it was tackling an issue that you know, affects everybody, the economy, and it, in that way it transcended those a lot of those ideological boundaries.
Mm-hmm. In fact, well, that's what it was the banks ripping everybody up. People were fucking pissed at the banks. It was the main reason the public, the general public, supported Occupy. But then again, the General Assembly was anarchistic, although it wasn't true consensus. It was a 90% majority, or they called it a 90% consensus, but that's, you're just kidding yourself.
People, you know, people who identify as anarchists subscribe to that philosophy played a key role in kickstarting the Occupy movement, and mm-hmm. I think deserve a lot of credit for that. Like you said, a lot of those process organizing tactics, consensus decision making, that sort of thing, have their history in, you know, movements that have been anarchistic.
Mm-hmm.
I just, like I said, I just think it's more than just anarchism. I don't consider myself an anarchist, but I definitely consider myself a supporter of the Occupy movement. And like I said, it was a lot of different types of
people. It was, and that's kind of why it split apart too. It wasn't so much that it got repressed, because that kind of repression was happening like every day back in the 60s and 70s, but the people kept on struggling. Occupy has pretty much gone away. I mean, I go to all the meetings as much as possible. There's very few people in town that do it anymore.
It's kind of a pale shadow of what mm-hmm. it used to be. But I think it's interesting that there's been continued General Assemblies here in Santa Cruz. I sort of think of it as like this little tiny candle flame, and if you can just keep that alive.
it's an open meeting. It's right? an open radical meeting in Santa Cruz that you don't necessarily have to deal with Robert Norris at.
Well, sometimes you have to deal with
I know he's there often,
you
but
know? I mean,
he's much
on.
Better behaved than his own.
Territory. I mean, people, if you...
But do you know of any other radical meetings in town, really?
Very few.
I mean, the anarchists have, but they're all secret.
Right. But yeah, I mean, there's
no really open meetings for radical struggle in town. It's just single issue kind of things, and
absolutely.
Other than, like I said, Robert or Occupy. So it does, you know, it does fulfill that function that you can.
Well,
people
I think
can
the
meet.
Left has been in kind of a malaise like that for a long time. That's really sort of reached its culmination with the whole Obama worship phenomenon.
He's a conservative.
Right. Yeah, you think people would figure that out by now, right? I like the little old lady who's in the newspaper said, you know, I still really like Obama, but I gotta say, I disagree with him on this whole drone thing. Like, oh, you're starting to get a little smidgen of a clue about that, huh? I mean, that's not to be condescending, but come on. The guy wants secret laws so that he can assassinate American citizens. And if you want to know what the legal justification is for doing that, even though it seems to, you know, run counter to the Constitution or whatever, you just have to take his word for it that there's a memo that gives a legal explanation for that, and you can't see it, but it's written by lawyers. So that's all that matters.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to pass constitutional muster.
You would think, but I mean, the administration is has definitely been, you know, pushing for that as much as they can. Look what they get let Bush get away with as far as you know, increasing the power of the executive branch.
Yeah.
And
until he started blaming the CIA for the weapons of mass destruction, then all of a sudden all his popularity went completely in the toilet, you know, almost magically.
Right. Yeah, funny how that works.
Yeah, you don't fuck with the CIA, unless you're on a very small radio station that no one listens to.
And they don't even give a damn what you say anyway.
Although there was a couple of cops killed recently in town by, you know, ex-military guy. It totally smells like spook shit to me, you know. And, you know, that whole let's get rid of their guns, it's pushing that agenda.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, the... Well, I think the gun issue is really interesting how it's a real wedge issue on the left.
We don't care. On the left, we don't give a fuck. I mean, we're not for guns, but we're not going to sit there and try and take people's... Damn it, we got to get rid of the guns the way the Christians want to take away your people's
There's
right to have an abortion.
Are pretty adamant about
Well,
that
yeah, they did, but they're not out protesting. Get rid of the guns.
Right,
you know,
totally.
It's just not a left issue. The right, on the other hand, loves them.
It's just internet chatter.
Yeah, yeah. Totally, so I don't see how this is, you know, if it is a bunch of Manchurian candidates that are being triggered, you know, to go out and kill a bunch of people just to try. I know that Occupy scared the authorities. You know, an armed Occupy scares the fuck out of them. So if they want to really keep repressing and taking our money, they know they got to get the guns out of our hands. And so they're in a quandary because it's the right that loves the guns, and that's their power base for the corporates that are in charge. Yeah.
But then that sort of splinters the right because, like, the people on the right who are really into the guns are like the Alex Jones libertarian
types. Yeah, I know. That's right.
And the libertarians have a really interesting Venn diagram. Does everybody out there know at Radioland know what a Venn diagram is? It's when the overlapping circles with, like, liberalism, right? Because there's things like, yeah, sure, we agree on drone bombings are bad. We agree on throwing due process of law out the window is bad.
They really agree a lot with the anarchists. They both feel the government's kind of bad.
Right, exactly. Exactly. The libertarians, the main difference between the libertarians and the anarchists, I think, is the anarchists tend to be more distrustful of the corporations, whereas the libertarians take their sort of anarchistic distrust of the government to the level of saying that, well, the government shouldn't be regulating the corporations.
Exactly. Well, that's why, I mean,
which I think is a recipe for disaster.
I mean, this goes back to the Babylon and Zargon. They were complaining about the government back there. The merchants, because once you eliminate the government power base, and the merchants' power base grows, because they can corrupt. I mean, they're already corrupting government. If there was no government corrupt, they'd have all that money to hire, you know, thugs to take your, I mean,
well, at this point,
they get power.
The idea that the government is regulating capital at all in this country is
no, it's reverse. We have fascism.
Exactly.
Business is regulating the government here. In socialism or communism, the government regulates the business.
And then, you know, they get a politician that gives them whatever sort of policy they want. You know, on Wall Street, they've been getting away with doing stuff because they just, well, that used to be illegal. We'll just buy a politician and make it not a crime anymore.
Right. Or buy it, or a judge.
Right. There you go. Oh, and I mean, geez, look at the local judiciary.
Oh, they're horrible, horrible. Except for Burdick. And
okay,
maybe,
well,
I kind of like Attic too, myself. Yeah. Since he got retired, people tell me he has more of a sense of humor. He's a right-wing judge, but I mean, he at least has some sense of fairness, whereas, say, someone like Volkman or Gallagher are just corrupt as hell. I mean, they'll go with whatever, you know, Take Back Santa Cruz might want.
Or the city attorney.
Or the merchants downtown.
What
or say,
an
or,
overpaid stuff shirt that guy makes like $500 an hour.
Oh, and he gets a pension, too. He's a private contractor. He's going to get a pension.
Right.
And he double
like,
dips.
Oh,
he's going to get one
broke.
From Capitola, too. You know, it used to be that you could only be a city attorney for Santa Cruz. But the prior one got that law changed or something. So now he's for both cities, Capitola and Santa Cruz.
Well, and isn't that just a sweetheart deal?
Oh, it is
him,
a total
huh?
sweetheart deal. And, you know, he totally gets ignored by most people. You know, they all go hassle city council, and those bozos just come and go. They're not really in charge of much. It's
the city manager and the city attorney. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and what's the city attorney do with his $500 an hour salary? He politicizes the courtroom by harassing bums.
Bums.
Is that
people
really
that
what
sing
we want
downtown?
Money to be spent on is like, we gave you a bunch of tickets, but you wouldn't pay for the tickets because you didn't have any money because you were poor. So we're going to spend a bunch of money to harass you in the courtrooms more to try to say that you can't stand over there or over there or over there or over there. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you hear about Take Back Santa Cruz saying how Santa Cruz has gotten worse. Well, the reason it's gotten worse is because of these repressive policies that Take Back Santa Cruz is pushing on them. I mean, it's gotten rid of the harmless homeless, right? That have a van, they have to re-register it next year that they're living in. They get this $250 ticket for, you know, singing on the sidewalk or something, and they have to pay it. They don't not going to pay
it. It's like the street musicians and the people that
find out
the vehicles
they can't renew their vehicles, so they don't come back. Yeah,
homeless people out there who are, you know,
yeah, those would be witnesses that would keep the more criminal minded in line. I mean, that's what happened in Haight-Ashbury. It used to be a very bad neighborhood until the hippies started sitting around until 3 or 4 in the morning on acid. And you can't do crimes when there's a bunch of people sitting around witnesses. So,
exactly.
So the homeless population in this town has gotten more criminal, more speed freaky or whatever. I mean, we know at Occupy. Occupy was like a shopping center for criminals.
Oh, well, and that was
my co-host got her tent ripped off, you know?
I think that was a very difficult dilemma that Occupy kind of got thrust into, that you had these people who wanted to protest the banks and things like that, and then at the same time, like, have some sort of a positive contribution to the homeless issue, but you can't just... you know, have a meeting about how people shouldn't be drug addicts anymore or something like that.
Meetings don't really work.
You know, and so...
So I had to self-police.
Occupy is being blamed for these problems that have to do with, like, other people's drug addictions, as if the Occupy people were responsible for creating that. And if you look at, like, the internet postings of Take Back Santa Cruz people, in their mind, it's, like, one and the same. Like, Occupy was a movement to coddle drug addicts and make them feel more comfortable to commit crime. It's like, no, that's not really what Occupy was about. There were people who, you know, I'd say in just about every Occupy camp, you know, the issue of homelessness was... something that was, you know, just part of the set of different things that the camp was addressing. I think in a lot of ways the Occupy camp had a really positive impact on the homeless community. You take people who don't have any sort of, like, real ambition or anything in their lives, because they're just used to being treated like crap everywhere they go. Mm-hmm. And so you sort of get like a diminishing horizon of
lowered expectations.
That's a good way of putting it. And actually, like, give them something like, hey, you know, here's something really positive that you can work on and treat like a long-term project and be able to see progress with. I think you know, for that was really good for a lot of people. And then, oh, get this, you know, the crime rate downtown dropped overall during the Occupy camp.
You got proof of that?
I've heard it. I don't have documentation. I'll have to look it up.
I believe it, because all the crime was focused on Occupy, right, and they didn't make any reports to the cops because it violated the ideology. Although, you know, when you are doing First Amendment protest, you can call the cops, and if they don't respond, you can sue them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
right.
Normally, they don't have to respond. They could let you get killed.
Selective enforcement.
They can let you get killed, but if you're doing First Amendment activity, they have to protect you. Or if another cop beats you up, they're supposed to protect you. But if a third party, they don't really have to do anything. They're not required to, at least under federal Title 42, Section 1983.
So anyway, I'll have to do some more research on that and come back some other time that I do a radio show.
So what do you do?
Or a YouTube show. I do a talk show called The Magic Box that's on YouTube, and you can find that by...
I mean, I enter Magic Box, it's going to be a lot of hits, right? How do I differentiate?
Well, that's the thing, is that you want to go to YouTube.com and search for these four words. They're the magic words. Magic Box Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz being the place where we live, Magic Box being the name of the show. So it's Magic Box Santa Cruz. Just remember that.
And what do you do
as
your
search term on YouTube? It'll come right up. We talk about art, science, politics. You know, a lot of it depends on just who the guest is. It goes a long way toward determining what we talk about, but... we try to keep it light.
You don't do politics?
Huh?
You don't do... because I've seen you around politically.
I said art, science, and politics are our three main theme areas.
What do you do in science?
So, science we haven't done nearly as much as I would like to have yet.
What's your specialty?
Just because it's been difficult getting scientists to... finding people to interview. We've got a few leads, but nothing has totally cashed in yet.
What kind of science?
But I've been talking to some people that work at NASA, so that's somewhere coming down the pike, is maybe some NASA scientists.
Physics?
I'd really like to talk to people who are working on exoplanets right now. So if anybody out there is, like, listening to this and you happen to be a scientist, an astronomer who's studying planets in other solar systems, or you know somebody who does so, drop us a line at magicboxradioshow@gmail.com, and we'd love to interview you. I'm also looking into tapping into some of the talent up on the hill here at UCSC, since it's a premier astronomy university and one of the world leaders in the search for extrasolar planets. And
I get a complaint, really, about... I know, too. There's actually a DJ on Free Radio. It's a physicist major.
Oh, okay.
And we both know, I'm sure you know, that there's an anarchist in town that's a physics PhD.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. That's neither cool. of those people, I've asked, so when light is traveling at the speed of light, you know, how do you, how much mass? No, it produces no mass.
Okay.
But, I mean, E equals MC squared. You can turn it around. E over C squared is the amount of mass in light when it's moving at the speed of light.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. So, but they don't, you know, I looked it up. It's called relativistic mass. They don't teach it anymore. So you're spending all this money for, you know, the education you get up there, and you're not even getting a basic part of relativity. So when they talk about all this new stuff in physics and astrophysics of the dark matter and the dark energy,
you think,
because
there's gaping holes in there.
Well,
in
they're not measuring that amount of mass. They're not, I guarantee you, they're not measuring the amount of mass that's in the light that's been going out for billions of years. You know, how could you tell? I mean, how could you even come up with a number for that? I'm sure they're not doing it. Just like in the greenhouse effect, they're not even, you know, covering the addition of methane. And that's going to be, there's a small world radio that's just, the guy says it's not just 20 times as strong, it's like 100 times as strong as carbon dioxide. So it's going to get hotter here really fast, because the Siberian tundra or whatever, the shallow sea, is now just billowing.
Once that melts, right.
It's doing it right now. There's huge bubbles. They're finding it just in the last few years of huge amounts of methane being pushed into the atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, and we're losing huge portions of the polar ice caps.
Yeah, it's cool.
I love how the oil companies are like, that's great.
Oh, now we can drill for the stuff that's underneath.
For more oil. Yeah. Right. And they almost had like an epic disaster with their oil rig up there. You remember that a few months back?
I don't follow
the ice shelf or something like that. Man. It was like narrowly avoided like another major oil spill, basically.
So it's the end of days. I mean, it's going to be... I've heard some people say, well, the carbon dioxide gets out in 100 years, but I've seen some stuff on the internet where the geologists say more like 100,000, you know, or more.
Yeah.
And that's... Yeah. So...
Well, and then what? We've got reactors melting down in Fukushima, which is like, what's... Oh, Fukushima? I forgot about
that's
that.
That's wormwood.
That?
Yeah, I know. Well,
does that even
thanks
exist
to the,
anymore? We don't need to talk about
thanks
it.
Thanks to Libya. I mean, it was top story there.
Right?
And then, you know that Obama gets most of his money from in his home state from nuclear power. So all of a sudden, we invade Libya, and now Fukushima is no longer top story.
Right.
And the radiation is still coming over.
Well, the logical conclusion, when you look at the Fukushima story, and then you look at the fact that we have reactors in this country that are the exact same model, brand name, General Electric type as the ones that are in Fukushima, it doesn't take too much connecting.
It doesn't
the dots.
Take an atomic scientist to realize we're fucked.
Right. So we better just get that story off the news right away. But hey, if people are film buffs, or if you're not a film buff and you'd like to learn from one such as myself about a really interesting thing that ties in with Fukushima, there's a film called Dreams, and it's by Akira Kurosawa, who is, of course, the 20th century Japanese director, considered one of the best directors of all time. He did The Seven Samurai, The Hidden Fortress, which is the plot basis for Star Wars. Like, Star Wars is basically the Hidden Fortress in space. And he also... So he did this movie toward the end of his life called Dreams, and it's a series of short vignettes, short films. Each one is a different dream. And there's one called Mount Fuji in Red, and this was made, I want to say, back in the early 90s. And it's about the nuclear reactors in Japan melting down. And people have this conversation where they say, but the government told us it was safe. You know, and everybody's running and panicking and fleeing and all that. So I think it's very interesting that sort of the grandmaster of post-war Japanese cinema correctly predicted the meltdown at Fukushima.
It's just the beginning.
And then the oil spill in the Gulf Coast. That's another one that the U.S. corporate media is in a conspiracy of silence over.
Yeah.
You don't hear about that anymore. Everything's fine. Tourism, come on down.
Have some
tar shrimp. Lobsters, you know? And then so things I've been reading on the internet is, in fact, I think Cynthia McKinney was talking about this, the former senator. You know, lobsters with extra, being born with extra limbs and extra eyes and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I mean, just all kinds of gnarly mutations, dead dolphins washing up on the beaches. Come on down! Go for a swim! Yeehaw! It's Louisiana!
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. I mean, that is the most epic... When you say we're living in the end times, I mean, that's... let's get the right-wing Christians all riled up here. Like, this is really it! Mm-hmm. Because... when we're talking about taking an ecosystem the size of the Gulf of Mexico, which is connected to the Atlantic Ocean, don't think for a second that the toxins didn't make it all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. Oh, no, they just stayed confined mm-hmm. in that one little area. That's not how water works. And if you look at a map of the currents in that region, you realize...
It gets everywhere.
Yeah, it gets everywhere.
Same thing with the radiation. It's going to get everywhere eventually.
Yeah, totally. So,
and that's in the Bible.
Should, but you know what? We shouldn't worry about these things. The really big issue that we need to deal with is heroin needles. Your kid might step on one. I know it hasn't happened yet, mm-hmm. but it could happen at any given moment.
Well, we got rid of the needle exchange, and now that problem will just disappear.
Oh, right. Well, I love the logic behind that. They're like, needle exchange is associated with heroin. Therefore, it's their fault. So, let's get rid of them. And it's like, okay, actually, the needle exchange, what they do is you take your used needles and you give them to the needle exchange. And if you want to get more needles from the needle exchange, you have to give them back the ones that you've already used before they'll hand it. That's why they call it an exchange.
Well, they're claiming they weren't working it that way. But the real fact is that you can go into drugstores in town and buy a needle for 60 cents. You know, people with diabetes can get needles.
Yeah, right. So what do we say? Oh, nobody can have hypodermic needles anymore. Is that, I mean, is this the solution to this dreaded epic needle problem that, you know, I mean, last time I went outside, I was just dodging needles everywhere I went.
Well, it's a policing problem. If we do have a drug problem, it's the police's fault. Right? That's their job. They're not doing their job. I don't see why Take Back Santa Cruz never connects those two ideas together since they're so logical.
Well, you know, I went to this thing at that police station over on Laurel Street, and it was the police, Zach Friend, who back then was the police spokesperson. He's since been elevated to the County Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, he creates this needle problem and then he gets rewarded for it.
Isn't that wonderful? Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's his fault, right? If we have a needle problem, it's the police and Zach Friend's fault.
If they're the agency that's the responsibility for them to do something about it, and it's this huge problem, I guess. I mean, the police haven't been dealing with the problem effectively. And along that lines, I thought it was really interesting what the police had to say at this event that I went to, which was that, well, you know, there was this one time that we decided we were going to do just raid the fuck out of everybody. Just raid, and arrest everybody we possibly could who had any connection to the drug trade. So they surveilled the drug dealers for months and months and collected data and figured out who was who. And who was giving money to who, and who was selling drugs to who, and they figured out who the dealers were, okay. And I think it was mainly methamphetamine dealers they were mm-hmm. going after.
They were targeting, okay.
So they took out all the methamphetamine dealers in town in like a single day, just one raid after another. And they said, you know what happened? Was within a few hours, the term they used was mid-level meth dealers
had been
replaced by a whole new set of faces who saw a market opportunity by all these other people being arrested and immediately went out and made a bunch of money selling meth to all the people who were jonesing because their regular dealer has been taken out of the picture. And so we're back to square one here. So basically, the police were admitting that their method of going about dealing with this problem is just an epic failure. It does not work at all. But then what was interesting about this presentation was they sort of said, like, they sort of framed it like, well, and that's how difficult the problem is that we're dealing with, which is why you need to just give us more
money,
more
cops,
more power, more. And instead of saying, like, hey, maybe we need another strategy here. Like, maybe this whole arrest the dealer strategy has, I mean, it's just been proven to not work.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have told you that. It's basic economics, supply and demand. As long as there's a demand, somebody will profit from providing a supply.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like college-level economics 101, which is something that obviously cops don't have to study to get their job.
Yeah, I guess according to Freakonomics, those low-level dealers don't make any money either.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they're living at their mom's or something, you know, just scraping
by. They just
by.
Make like a substance income.
Yeah, the guy on the top, you know, makes a ton. And gangs used to turn over,
well,
you know.
Well, it's just like a corporation.
Yeah.
So isn't that interesting that a corporation and a street gang are basically
basically the same
hierarchical.
That's right. Militaries run the same way.
Right.
I mean, it costs a lot of money. So that's why they're involved in dealing drugs, militaries, and, you know, blood diamonds and oil. It's always dirty and corrupt because those fucking weapons cost a lot of money.
Well, this is something that the next time I get a chance to speak in a room full of Take Back Santa Cruz people, boy, I wonder where that would be. I'm going to bring this up as like, okay, if you guys are so freaking concerned about people shooting up drugs, which from my point of view, I don't care if people get high. Somebody else wants to, like,
well, that's
high.
Yeah, I mean, that's not the problem. Well, they
other,
do
the right. Secondary things are like robbing and stealing
that's
and cheating.
The problem.
That's the problem. If somebody wants to get high, by all means, like, freaking go and knock yourself out and have a good time. Okay, that's for as far as I'm concerned. You know?
You should be able to go to a government whatever control thing and be able to take just enough so you don't OD and whatever.
Oh, you mean like they did in Portugal, which led to an overall drop in the drug rate when they legalized all, I mean, in the not just the drug use rate, but the crime rate?
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
All crime.
Crime will go
dropped.
Way down if drugs were legal, because, that's why they're so expensive, because it's illegal. That's why they have to steal, because you only get 10-15% of the value
and so
for the drug.
So actually criminalizing the drugs benefits the drug cartels because they're able to profit
and
more
the police.
Off of the fact that it's a black market.
Don't forget the police.
Well,
you know,
and look at how
it's
many
jobs for police. Not to mention, you can get some graft. You can shake those guys down for money. Who's to know?
Hey, well, and how many of those cops you think are, you know, getting high on evidence, quote unquote? I need to confiscate your evidence here.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We're going to party tonight.
Kids. Dad's left his, you know,
right.
Coke stash here. I put some baking soda in.
Totally. Yeah. Here's what I want to say. To all the Take Back Santa Cruz people who are religious listeners to the freaky lefty pirate radio station, right? But anybody who's out there, and if you know somebody from Take Back Santa Cruz, have them sit down and listen.
Well,
to
if
this.
You could do posts, you know, they do get on Indie Bay. But
there you go. Right.
They don't listen to this because they can't do posts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's just bring up the fact: if you guys are so freaking against drugs, then you ever heard of this little tiny banking company called HSBC that worked in cahoots with the Mexican drug cartels to launder billions of dollars, money laundering, completely illegal, you know, violating all these customs laws, bankrolling people who, oh, get this, you know what they do for a living down in Mexico? You know how the Mexican drug cartels stay in power? By assassinating government officials and police officers.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that's another thing that Take Back Santa Cruz is opposed to, is summarily assassinating police officers in the streets because they don't go along with somebody's drug trade business model. And, so this was all bankrolled by this banking corporation that got off scot-free. Oh, they got paid a fine, you know, which amounted to something like 2 or 3 months worth of their profit. So it's like this little tiny road bump in their profit. Ba-bump. Oh, jeez, that slowed us down a little bit. And nobody went to jail. Nobody did a day for it. Nobody got any criminal charges. So, you're surprised that the streets are flooded with drugs when the Obama Justice Department is basically sending the signal to all the big banks that they pretty much have de facto immunity to launder drug money until the cows come home.
Once again, remember the CIA admitted to, you know, using smuggling cocaine into America.
Oh, yeah, and Michael Rooker was the police chief down in Los Angeles who came out and blew the whistle on the fact that, you know, Gary Webb's story in the San Jose Mercury.
Didn't he get assassinated over that story? Didn't he die?
I think it's one of those, like, suspicious death sort of things where conspiracy theories abound, but nobody really knows for sure.
Maybe like Hugo Chavez's death.
Right, getting cancer. And, well, because, the theory I've been hearing about that is, like, the woman whose name escapes me, who's the new leftist president of Argentina's contracted cancer, and it's just like, oh, if you're a leftist political leader in South America, watch you're out for at that a higher risk of cancer for some reason. So I don't know, man. I mean,
get them some smart meters.
Yeah, you get the whole internet conspiracy land. That gets a little tinfoil hat for my taste. So I'm not gonna really state an opinion one way or another. I just report the news, and that's that. This is what people are saying.
We're talking about the coke dealing and stuff. I mean, because you need it for the weapons. They needed it to fund the Contras because Congress cut them off. They were also busting out banks too.
So yeah, I mean, the Iran-Contra was secret branch of the government involved in arms trade and
coke smuggling.
Okay, and
into Bill Clinton's airport.
right. And funding, death squads because, quasi-Marxist or leftist movements in Central America that
scare them.
That didn't go along with the profit maximization model of the United Fruit Company, that sort of thing. And then the Obama administration, what's their big scandal is Fast and Furious, where, you know, this was their brilliant law enforcement idea, was we'll give guns to the drug cartel. So you got HSBC is laundering their money. The Obama administration's giving them guns because then, the guns are marked and we'll track them. Yeah.
We got barcodes on the bullets.
And use those guns to assassinate people, and then it comes back around. And then you know what the Obama people said when that it was like, "Oh, this is just a Republican scheme to try to trip up our wonderful president who's trying to do these wonderful liberal reforms." Pay no attention to this.
He's not a liberal. I don't know why people...
Why do people think this? Why? It makes no sense at all. If you look at Obama's record, if you look at things like drone bombing, indefinite detention, the torturous
merit pay for teachers, offshore drilling.
Bradley Manning, who was tortured in prison for leaking information about U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. U.S. diplomatic cables that led to all these pro-democracy movements that the U.S. comes out and says they support right at the last minute when their favorite dictator is about to be kicked out of power.
Yeah, they've shifted.
We love the pro-democracy movement. Oh, yeah. We're all about it.
They've shifted the whole political spectrum to the right. Obama's a conservative. Bush was a Nazi.
I think Obama's worse than Bush in a lot of ways.
Does what he's told.
Better or worse, it's a continuation of the same style of policy.
Yeah, nothing changes. It's the same secret societies running the mid-level of the hierarchies and stuff.
But you got the left, I think, in a lot of ways, is just immobilized by this whole identity politics trip isn't it wonderful that we put a black man in the White House? And it's like, well, yeah, he's a corporate sellout and a militarist imperialist, but he's a black guy. Isn't that good?
It's some kind of progress. It opens the way.
On a very sort of insignificant, symbolic kind of level. I mean, it's interesting to see how much it's pissed off the right. You know, I mean, that's been kind of an entertaining phenomenon of the...
Yeah, they hated Clinton like crazy.
Just cannot stand
the same way about Clinton. They hated it. Right. Although we had a booming economy, it's the best America we've had for decades under his.
Right, right. Yeah, and well, and I mean, even he was kind of a pro corporate.
He's a conservative. Yeah,
suck up
like
guy.
I said, that his airport was where they smuggled the coke in. So
right.
You know, he may not have known that the CIA was knocking off his girlfriends, but I think they were doing him a favor. To, you know,
the Glass-Steagall legislation from the Roosevelt.
That's what
New
we
Deal
need. That's why the banks.
Era. That's
fucked
why
us.
The banks. Yeah, exactly. It was because
they
now
got
they
rid
can
of that.
Take,
yeah.
Now they can take Granny's savings account and go bet it on Wall Street and bet it on their mortgage scams.
Well, they do it on these derivatives.
Right.
Well, they create.
It's a derivative.
They create
of
these
multi-trillion.
Yeah. Positions where they got both sides of it, so theoretically they can't lose, and they're making a few cents in the middle.
Because they're not. It's investing in mortgages. You're not like, oh, I'll put my money down to back the performance of this mortgage and place a bet on that. You're buying a mortgage derivative package. It's a bunch of little tiny fractions of a bunch of mortgages all smushed together.
And
they did this thing where they mixed the good with the bad.
Yeah, same thing Milken did with the bonds.
Corrupt credit rating agencies who are in the pocket of the banks to say, oh, yeah, these are AAA ratings, even though really what it is it's like 10% AAA thrown in with a bunch of BBB and CCC. But it's AAA because, it's a little fractions
it was
of
new.
The mortgage package or AAA, and that'll just float the whole thing.
Yeah, people,
the rest of
it was new. People saw, oh, it's as good as a mortgage, but it wasn't.
And Goldman Sachs then placing bets against their own clients, like going to their investment clients and say, oh, you got to buy this hot mortgage. And then going and placing bets for their own bank on the mortgage losing, knowing full well that they're setting up their clients to take a dive, and even referring to them by, I'm trying to remember, there's some insulting term they were referring to their clients in their emails that got leaked. Like, just these people are a bunch of suckers, that kind of thing. Like, just talking about their own clients like they're the scum of the earth. So, yeah, that's it. I really recommend them as an investment bank if you want to go make some money on the stock market. Right.
I mean, and then they'll front load, too. You put in a big order, they'll buy it ahead of you and sell it to you at a higher price. You know,
they've all been doing that forever. Yeah. Right. And who's gone to jail for it? Bernie Madoff. And why did he go to jail? Oh, because he ripped off the other rich bankers. If he just stuck to, ripping off gullible poor people who are like, really? You'll give me a loan for $1 million house because you think I'm such a swell guy? Sure, okay, Matt Taibbi calls it Griftopia in this book that he wrote about the mortgage scams that led to the collapse of the economy that put us in the recession that we're in now. And Griftopia is the utopia for grifters and con artists, and basically if you look at it's all up and down.
That's Babylon, baby.
The real estate industry and
it bounces from area
all
to area,
all different levels, from your neighborhood banker who wants to give you a mortgage loan all the way up to like the fat cats in some high rise in Manhattan. They're all a bunch of grifting criminal ripoff artists. But they get treated like, oh, they're these exalted, successful people. And, oh, that's just the thing that you want to be.
Job creators.
That's a good one.
Why don't we have zero unemployment? We've never had zero unemployment.
They create plenty of jobs in China and Vietnam and Indonesia, which are low-wage markets. That because, under Clinton, NAFTA, all those free trade agreements, rigged the trade system. So instead of slapping a tariff on imports, which provides an incentive to keep jobs here in the United States because it's more there's an extra cost attached to importing. Hey man, let's just let the jobs go to the lowest wage markets around, and then hey, we can push wages down for everybody worldwide, all over the planet, because hey, if you don't like it, we'll just ship your job overseas.
That's right.
So you better work for shit wages. And
the comparative advantage there isn't any, you know, they're not really better at doing it in these other places. They just have cheaper land prices and a lower cost of living.
Well, and they have,
and that's not going to last. As they succeed, their price of land goes up, and then the jobs move from there too.
They have governments that are like a step or two ahead of us in terms of just instituting just complete overt fascistic repression in the streets. That like, oh, you want to go on strike? Okay, we have some cops that'll just beat.
That's true, but we're talking about Red China too. It's not just the fascists; the communists also do the same stuff.
Well, absolutely. Well, and
they're actually better off than we are now. Their economy's booming.
I'm using
communist capitalist
fascistic. Fascistic is sort of a general term
for totalitarianism.
Exactly, okay. Repressive police state government, which you get under communism, you get it under capitalism.
Well, fascism.
Yeah.
When business controls government.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, the Chinese communist government is referred to as being communist as just sort of this leftover historical reference to where they came from. Originally, they're a full-blown capitalist market economy.
Now, yeah.
I mean, well, like I said, I didn't make a difference. The Communist Party,
but we're all mixed. I mean, we're not fully capitalist.
They've taken the Chairman Mao's little book and flushed it down the toilet, and adopted this Western bankster financier. Predatory capitalism model.
And that's why capitalism is popular, though, because it does. I mean, they are better off now in terms of wealth. So that's why it's popular.
It's a good way. You can get sort of like short term economic bubbles.
Yeah.
Out of it, they're really good if you're in your phase where you're like, let's take all this countryside and turn it into city. That's the phase that they're in right now. Is cities popping up all over the place in China, and the image of Chinese roadways being this place where the cars share the road with bicycles is increasingly becoming a thing of the past.
And they all love Buicks now. Dennis was saying they love Buicks there.
Right, right.
They're getting rid of the bikes, and it's all Buicks.
It's sort of like. What we refer to in the United States is the American dream is this.
Yeah, there it is.
Vision
it's the Chinese dream is that they're living
mobility,
it right now. Yeah,
right,
we're going the other way because the jobs are going there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, and they own our debt.
Well, we're going to stiff them on that. I guarantee you we're not going to pay that back.
Right, totally.
And that's the best way to... That's what Iceland did, over this whole fucking collapse. You don't hear about Iceland very much. They just said, fuck you, we're not paying you back. And boom, their economy's fine. We're still struggling because they're trying to pay.
Iceland is the absolute model for what every country in the world...
Yeah, that's right.
If every country in the world
Templars.
Had sane leaders... Who actually wanted to have stable societies with prosperous economies? They would all be doing what they're doing in Iceland, which is they took all their bankers who committed fraud,
made them
and
criminals.
Threw them in jail. Okay, they relieved people's debt. The government bailed out the foreclosures instead of bailing out the banks. Even here in the U.S., like, the government, when they did those big bank bailouts, they could have earmarked the money and told the banks, like, if we're going to give you taxpayer money, you have to use it to bail out people's mortgages. And the banks still would have made money off of that because then all their mortgages would have been solvent. But instead, they just said, hey, man, give yourself a bonus. Go take a vacation in Tahiti and continue to profiteer off of kicking people out of their houses. Go right ahead.
And there's the claim that they've paid those back. But what really happened was the Federal Reserve loaned them trillions of dollars. Who knows how big?
At zero interest.
Yeah. They took that money. They didn't loan it out to improve our economy. They went and bought government bonds. They're completely safe. So they captured that interest difference that the government bond pays. And they were using free money to do it, and then they could leverage it nine times.
So basically, they found a way to profit off of quote-unquote paying back.
They're
the
still getting bailed out. They're getting bailed out by the bond interest,
They're getting bailed out like two or three times over.
Yeah,
there,
they get bailed out to buy the bonds, and then the interest makes it look like they paid it back, but we just bailed them out, period.
Yeah.
I mean, and so why are they privately owned? Why is the Federal Reserve privately owned? That should be a nationalized thing.
The Reserve just sort of like creates money out of thin air. Like, oh, we just decided
exactly
that $100 billion that didn't exist before now exists in the U.S. economy because we want to give it to our banker buddies.
$2 trillion minimum, more likely,
so
you know,
can keep their
in the tens of trillions.
Their bubble, their investment bubbles are, you know, are, whenever they get close to popping, they say, oh, well, here, we'll just create more money. Of course, the problem with that being is that it leads to inflation because you're not creating more value. You're just creating funny money. You're just creating monopoly money.
Sort of, they're loaning it, so it has to come back too. So it's actually they're sucking money out if it does ever get paid back.
Right.
So it's not exactly the same as printing it up. And right now we have an overhang of supply. We're in deflation. You know, there is some inflation going on, but most of the people are out of work. You know, those aren't the signs of inflation. That's a sign of deflation. And the economy's about to fall apart and everybody's in debt. Those are all deflationary things. So that's keeping the inflation in check. I mean, yeah, it should be exploding, but it's only rents going up a little bit and, you know, gas going up a little bit. It's because of that overhanging debt. And that's what causes these depressions is that we are not making enough money to afford our style of living. So they're going to loan us a bunch of money just so they can continue to report huge corporate profits and make their bonuses and everything.
Well,
and we just get worse and worse in debt, and the whole thing collapses at some
point.
Yeah.
And it gives people this sort of false notion of reality that, you can just continue to live off credit. Indefinitely, if you need more money, we'll just allocate some more credit for that, but credit is debt, so eventually that's going to come back around in terms of slowing down the overall economy.
Because you still owe it, unless you can stip them,
right?
And then they get mad and invade you. I mean, that's
right.
That's what Cinco de Mayo was all about.
You know, they
came in
what
and
they did
invaded Mexico
in Iceland. Which was the government actually stepped in and said, no, we're not just going to let the banks run wild and do whatever the hell they want with their depositors' money.
Yeah, London didn't like that.
We're actually going to, you know, make them stick to some sane regulations. And, yeah, they got a booming economy.
Yeah.
And then look at, you know, so what's the latest one is Cyprus.
Oh yeah, here's
and
here.
It's this little island.
They're gonna say fuck
Europe,
you too. Yeah,
all of Europe is like holding their breath that this little tiny island is gonna kick over their entire banking system because the whole thing is just built on a mountain.
Another island,
anyway. Right.
Another small island. So they have to. I mean, they're you're seeing it first on the islands because they're smaller economies. Yeah, they're untenable, so they can't pay it back. Whereas we're putting it off and loaning it and putting up, you know, kicking it down the road. There's still a major financial collapse coming in this country.
Well,
we have barely scratched the surface.
So the banking system in Cyprus is collapsing. So the European Union
then that might be the euro
and take all this money from German taxpayers and French taxpayers and Spanish taxpayers and use that to bail out these criminal banks in Cyprus and as if they can just continue to keep kicking that can down the road of whenever one of their economies becomes unstable. The rest of us will just step in and bail them out, and we'll just have money forever. We'll just keep bailing it out, even though the system doesn't work. And what happens when you've got say two or three major European companies going into an economic crisis simultaneously, and there's nobody left to bail them out? Then what?
It's a very tricky. There's a book called, I think, A Stock Market Crashes and Panics by Kildeberg. You can never deregulate banks. They will always crash an economy if they do because they can print up that fractional reserve bank and just create money out of nowhere.
Right.
And that's one thing. He also says whenever there's a boom, there'll be a secondary boom in land as they move, you know, like the internet money, cause all our rents to rise here, the secondary boom. And then there's always a problem with the lender of last resort. Because if you always step in and bail out, then everybody just assumes they're going to get bailed out and just goes bets like crazy during the boom. So you have to just, you know, save some of them.
That's exactly what's happening.
That's what's happening.
The American banks.
Yep. Certain ones are favored.
They have not, hardly done anything at all. I mean, we get this watered down Dodd-Frank legislation.
Yeah, nothing. They've done nothing to limit the bank's problem.
I mean, there's been no
right?
consequences for the banks.
We're not. We haven't gone back to Glass-Steagall at all, right?
Right.
We're continuing to do the same old fucking bullshit.
Which Glass-Steagall is the separation between an investment bank and a community bank.
Yeah.
So you can't. They can't just take
bet your money
account
on Wall Street,
bet it on Chevron or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, nothing's changed there, and then.
So it's going to happen again.
Yeah. Yeah.
In very short order, too, because our economy hasn't improved. I mean, we're in a boom right now. We're in a boom, but it's fucking tepid and lousy.
Yeah, yeah, it's a very feeble boom.
Mm-hmm.
And with the government, this whole sequestration thing, continuing to do this budget austerity.
That's deflationary, too. That's pulling money out of the economy.
Right.
In fact, it's pulling... If you take money from rich people, that's much better than taking it from regular people, because regular people go out and spend it and turns over, 20 times.
Exactly.
Rich people only invest it and only turns over like 15%, and not nearly as much.
Rich people go put it in a big pile.
That's the problem, because they've been getting their taxes cut. That money should be put in the hands of more intelligent people, like the normal masses. Distribute it in the proper ways to create a booming economy. Yeah, just giving money to rich people is the stupidest thing we could do.
Well, it's like the way that every dollar that goes out in food stamps ends up turning over a few times.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember the exact dollar.
Yeah,
if it wasn't
for food stamps and extended unemployment, we'd be in a much worse position right now.
Absolutely.
We'd be like the 30s, soup lines and everything.
But this is exactly what the conservative people...
don't understand.
...want to take away.
Yeah.
You know? They think
exactly.
They have this weird theory... That because it's money coming out of the treasury, that it's a drain on the economy, and it just doesn't actually work that way.
No.
Like actually, if myself or anybody else who is on the food stamp program, it goes out and spends food stamp money, or CVS or Safeway or New Leaf or Staff of Life, or I just give them free advertising. any kind of place like that, take your pick. So then, that's money that just went to that company that they can afford to pay their employees, right? And then it turns over again, because then they can go out and spend that money. And so, yeah, it ends up generating...
multiplying 10 or 20 times.
Yeah, well, it's not 10 or 20 times, but
It's pretty good. It's up there.
It's definitely, you're ending up with more money in the economy than when you started, and more money than you would have in the economy if there were no food stamp program at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's slightly inflationary, but as we said, during deflation, you don't have to worry about it. It's actually, that's what Keynesian economics is. He talks about you hire some guy to dig a ditch and fill it back in. It doesn't really matter what they're doing. You're just getting money into his pocket so he can create demand in the economy. So when Bush practiced Keynesian economics, he doesn't give it to the ditch digger. He gives it to his rich friends, and it doesn't work. You got to give it to the poor that are going to turn it around.
Right. Well, the rich have so much money to begin with, whereas,
like the guy said, I'm not going to go out and buy 20 suits. I don't consume that much. You know, the demand comes from the consumers.
You only need so many yachts.
Yeah.
I mean, whereas, the poor are liable to spend, pretty much all their income.
That's right. They don't have wealth.
And as opposed to putting it in savings or, investing it in something, they're taking all of that money and putting it right directly back into circulation,
mm-hmm.
right directly back into
creating demand.
Yeah.
And we have excess supply right now. What we need is that demand to, start using up that supply and getting rid of that overhanging supply.
Exactly. Yeah. The warehouses are backed up because nobody
There's
has
all
money.
Those houses sitting there empty.
Nobody has money to freaking spend on anything.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's...
up to their eyeballs in debt.
Exactly. Right? And waiting out the recession or something before they can go and get that new color.
Another right-wing, the flat tax, whenever I hear that.
Jeez. Right.
That would be great if it was a flat tax on wealth. The poor have no wealth, so they're not even going to get taxed.
Yeah.
And then it's a fairer tax, because they talk about it being a fair tax. Okay, if it's on wealth, then it's fair, and it wouldn't need to be that much. 1% on wealth or something, 2%. It would encourage them to make correct business investments so they can make more than the 2% that they're losing every year.
Well, that's another one of those, talking points are based on principle that seems really simple and really obvious.
Exactly right. Yeah.
If you only examine it on the surface, well, of course,
look at it from one point of view. Yeah.
Well, of course, the flat tax is fair. Everybody pays the same percentage. It's equality. It's fair.
Okay. Seems like it. Sounds like it.
Sounds good, but okay. So you know, things that aren't being factored in there are, for one thing, like how much did the company that made that person rich depend on you know, government spending,
university research,
all of that, to
roads,
right, you know,
military protection of their oil fields,
right, or police protection of their buildings, that sort of thing, you know. So that's all government spending that that they didn't just you know, make that wealth all by themselves. They were mm-hmm. dependent on this whole taxpayer funded infrastructure to be able to accumulate those profits in the first place. And then the other thing is that the richer you are, the more you can afford to pay into the system without mm-hmm. it really putting that big of a dent in your freaking lifestyle, okay?
That's right.
Jesus. Hey, it's America for you.
But another thing, it's like, the left, we don't care about tax. It's not our, it's the right, because they're the ones that, you know, are stealing from the rest of us by not paying their taxes. They've got a rigged system in terms of power when it comes to economics.
Well, people on the left care about taxes because the way it really affects us, or affects working class people, is in the form of budget austerity. When the government, oh, we don't have money for anything anymore, so we're going to cut all your programs, and you can't go to the swimming pool anymore. And, you know, all that.
Gosh, well, you know, I've been waiting for them to cut the golf course here. We spend like $500,000 a year on that fucking thing. Most of it just for government employees who work there. You know, we could just rent it out to a private interest and make money off it. And yet we're subsidizing the, you know, golfing practices of a very small number of people in town.
Right, which is this really, like, hugely resource-intensive land use.
Oh, yeah, and water use?
Right.
What do we need desal? Well, let's just get run on one of these golf courses. They're using a ton of water.
Right, I mean, we have more than one in town. Like, yep. How many do you need? How many of the rich people need? How
yeah,
many
exactly.
golf courses do you guys need? going golfing in one place isn't good enough for you. You just gotta go golfing freaking anywhere you want to, huh?
Well, remember, there's some government jobs up there. Those are very well paid for the amount of work you have to
do. Hey, man, the Keynesians...
Wouldn't you like a government
the
job?
The Keynesians would be all about it, right?
Wouldn't you like one of these government jobs in town where you get 90% when you retire?
Hey, man, if, you know, job security, all of that.
It pays over
$30
an hour.
I, the people that take those jobs, I don't blame them, for sure.
Well, those are excellent jobs in this town.
Right.
I mean, you can't even get a retail job unless you know somebody in this town. Everybody wants to live here, so jobs are very hard to come by.
Oh, it's ridiculous, right. Or, you know, and I mean, what? We don't have manufacturing in this town.
No, there's
like,
very
Ridley's
little.
Ridley's went away, you know, so.
No, well, our exports are the university.
Right.
And tourism.
Right.
And then,
these
smaller.
Really marginal, just sort of like service economy jobs of like, go be a barista,
yeah,
make burritos, right? Or then mm-hmm. the other one that people live off of is like, I'm a massage therapist, yoga teacher,
blah, life, blah, blah, life coach.
Right. You know, whenever somebody tells me I'm a life coach, I said, really? So you want to give me career advice, and the best thing that you could come up with was life coach? Jesus, man. Really. I've had experience with some life coaches that were some real whirlybirds, man, that just didn't know the first thing how to relate
like you said,
to the situation.
I hear that, and
through.
I go, okay, somebody's paying for that, but not me.
Exactly, right? So, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting little cottage economy that I wonder how much longer that can really last. That, you know, I was in India Joe's restaurant the other day, and there's a bunch of people hanging out, and this girl comes up, and she's talking to one of the people in my party that I was with, and she starts like kind of rubbing her shoulders and stuff while they're having a conversation, and I looked over and I said, hey man, anytime you feel so inclined to do that to me, give me a shoulder rub, you can go right ahead. This goes for everybody out there, all the ladies, hello ladies. And oh, she looks at me and says, "85 an hour."
Yeah.
And I just kind of shrugged it off and thought to myself, like, "You're not getting freaking $85 from me right now. We're in a recession."
Well, you can always negotiate. I know someone you can get one for $60 an hour on the mall.
Oh, man, you got competition out. So $85 an hour, lady, you might want to offer a discount or somebody else is going to undercut you in the competitive capitalist market, okay?
That's right.
That's right. So let's push the wages down on all the massage therapists, yoga teacher. What are the other ones? Life coach, aromatherapist, you know, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, which is all great and wonderful.
Those people have had to leave Santa Cruz for the most part because the rents are so hard because you can't make money doing that.
It's so expensive to live here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the other thing is that, you know, the city they're just pissing all this money down the toilet on, like, political court cases. And you know,
our friends,
right? Yeah, our friends, totally going after our friends. And you know, they're not creating low-income housing.
No.
I mean, the last big housing project that happened in this town was that thing up at the top of the Ave that's, like, you know, multi-$100,000 apartments.
Yeah, that's the forgotten cause in Santa Cruz. I mean, the homeless get tons of support from the Christians, Robert Norris. We do stuff on this show.
Well, everybody wants
the working
to give
middle
you
class
freaking sandwich, but that's not the same thing as having affordable housing, man.
Right, but I'm talking about the middle class has disappeared in this, or the lower working and the middle class are getting squeezed out of Santa Cruz. Nobody's defending their cause here. Like you said, there's no low income housing. There's no good jobs here for that class. That class is just getting squeezed out.
Like the Take Back Santa Cruz people, like, as near as I can tell, what they want is just, you know, to have, like, a checkpoint at the county line on the way in. If, you know, if you don't have enough money on your credit card, you're not even allowed into the region. I mean, I mean, literally, this movement toward...
I'm wondering how many of those...
gentrification.
Yeah, it's gentrification.
And then this, you know, it's interesting how their rhetoric, like... I call it the different levels of Take Back Santa Cruz rhetoric. There's this sort of, like, trying to sound PC level of it where we just talk about how we're really concerned about crime and families and things like that. And it's always crime and families and safety and families and safety.
That's to appeal to the widest possible.
Right, right. But then if you really dig in the internet, you can find the places where they're kind of more troll...
racial profiling.
Right, sort of behavior comes out. And it's things like they want to... cut the budget to the homeless shelter.
Oh, yeah.
And their theory seems to be that if you cut the homeless budget to the homeless shelter, then all the homeless people will be forced to leave town. And
that's the exact opposite.
The homeless problem.
Now, you know what? Because my brother got 2 years for sleeping. And in both cases, it's... oh, there's an empty bed at the mental health clinic. Hegman always comes up with this magic empty bed that makes him guilty. If there are no shelters, the homeless can sleep anywhere constitutionally.
Oh, hey.
Because they have no alternative.
Right.
As long as there's that, there's a shelter they can go to. Oh, there's this one magic bed, you know, the tomb of the unknown bed. It's just, you can't find it if you want to sleep in it, but if you ever get popped, it's always there. Get rid of both shelters, you know. Then the homeless can be sleeping on your fucking lawn, you know.
Don't give a damn about the Constitution or the
law or anything like that. Yeah, but
we'd
be winning in court.
They think the laws are just things that they make up as they go.
Yeah, they don't get it. They don't get it. But I'm saying, yeah, if they get their way, the political backlash, the homeless will be on their lawn then, you know, or in the sidewalk in front of their house, and there nothing can be done about it at that point because there's no alternative that we can say we can send them to. It's called a necessity defense.
Well,
if you have nowhere to stay, they can't charge you for...
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay, so that's fine. I mean, go right ahead. You know, I just think it's crazy that...
that just shows how stupid they are. They don't get it.
They're just ridiculously, like, painfully, like, licking lead paint off the walls stupid.
Yeah, if we have a drug problem, why aren't you hassling the cops to fix it? You know, why does it...
Well, they'll blame
who else fault is it? You know, it's the cops. That's
exchange,
all.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, how is it the needle exchange's fault? You know, it's fucking, and it's not just the needles. It's like you said, it's all the stealing and everything that they're upset. And there is quite a bit of that in town.
Well, no, here's the other thing about the needle exchange: is the needle exchange like saves people's lives?
Yeah, that's it's a health issue too.
But that's exactly the reason why people in Take Back Santa Cruz don't like it. I mean, look at this letter to the editor.
Yeah. Oh, I heard about there was one.
A couple weeks ago,
Robinson
the guy said that, I mean, not only did he basically insinuate that they're planning on going around beating up homeless people all over town.
Well, they used to do that.
Okay.
The cops used to.
Not only that, but he said in his letter that, like, he thinks that if a bunch of heroin addicts get a disease and die off, then that's a good thing, because then there's less heroin addicts.
But they don't die off from AIDS anymore. It's just a very expensive medical condition.
Right. Totally.
That your tax dollars will be paying for Take Back Santa Cruz.
Well, and it goes to show, once again, how stupid these people are. They don't even understand basic epidemiology.
Yeah.
But on the other hand... If AIDS spreads throughout the IV needle user community... It's exactly like, when AIDS was first on the scene, that everybody wanted to ignore it because, oh, it's just gay people and IV users who are getting that disease. And honestly, who gives a rat's ass about them? So we'll just let those people die off. But then all of a sudden, and Dan Savage, the columnist up in Seattle, who also does a radio show and everything, writes about this. He says it became the AIDS crisis. Like, they started calling it that in the media, the AIDS crisis, when heterosexual, upper middle class people started getting it. Because that's how epidemiology works.
It spreads.
Like, if you have a sexually transmitted disease, people like to take their genitals and cram them into other people's genitals. And there's no way to get around that. And it will spread. And if you allow it to spread, it'll eventually jump from one demographic population to the other. Because that's just how it works. So if he thinks that, you can just, do this eugenic strategy of, hey, drug addicts, would you like a blanket? I promise it doesn't have any smallpox in it. And think that that's just going to kill off all the people that they don't like, and not eventually come around and their kid is going to be the next person to get the disease. You might want to study science, really. Yeah, science, public health, policy. Yeah, there's this thing called the internet.
Yeah,
you can read about it.
As we say again, they're taking over this town. I mean, they got another candidate in. There's like a block now.
Don Lane's on the way out. What the hell is up with all the people in town who are ostensibly liberal, who are still here, who haven't been driven out by the economy or just the general rotten attitude or anything like that, who are sitting idly by and allowing this to happen? And this is you, dear listener, out there on the radio, listening, all five of you, if we're lucky.
And, very close.
Go to a freaking city council meeting already, because these crazy right-wing people go to the city council meetings and they get what they want, because they kick and scream and they do the footwork.
Well, there's your anarchist problem right there. They won't go through this. And that's the majority of activists in this town are anarchists, although most of them are, transient.
Yeah, well, I think anarchism is stupid, personally. So, well, there you go. did you hear me say that, anarchists? I did. You need, if you have a plan to, like, how you're going to go take care of all the wheelchair people after you get rid of Social Security because you abolish the government... I'd like to see you, write up a comprehensive report about how you're going to go do that. And if you're not willing to even, like, take the time to sit down and write up a comprehensive report, then you don't have a plan, and you should probably concede that not every single thing that the government does is evil. And, in fact, some of the things that the government does are necessary. And really the problem is not government per se, it's the particular form of government that we have right now, which is basically bought, owned, sold, and paid for by multinational corporations
who swear
no allegiance to
even a general assembly had its problems. I mean,
well, yeah.
They all have problems.
Yeah.
And the whole idea, remember that the idea that government is bad isn't one of the main planks of the Republican platform.
Right. So isn't that interesting that the anarchists and the Republicans, there's that Venn diagram again. You remember with the Venn diagram where you take the circles and you overlap them?
Anarcho-capitalism.
Right. Yeah, anarcho-capitalism. Well, anarcho-capitalism is basically libertarianism. It's another way of kind of saying the same thing. Yeah. You know? And the libertarians, I think, are really interesting. Like, I actually think on some level it's a positive development that, like, Ron Paul and his son have been kind of stirring things up over there in the Republican Party because, once again, the Venn diagram, you know, there's a lot. I don't agree with the whole Ayn Rand economic philosophy of just let the rich run hog wild and do whatever the frick they want to.
Look what it's done to our economy.
I know. It's just been wonderful. Wow.
But remember, blame it on someone else. Don't take responsibility for your ideology.
Blame it on the queers. Blame it on the whatever, you know.
The liberals.
It's their fault.
Yeah.
Right.
And the unions. It's because of the unions we don't have high-paying jobs.
Such a huge percentage of the American workforce.
Like 7% now, right. Outside
so,
of government.
So whenever the economy crashes, it's because of this little tiny sliver of the workforce. Sure, that's what's going on here. So that whole aspect of the libertarian agenda, like get rid of the EPA, that kind of thing, is just complete, like, bat guano insane, and I don't support it. Uh-huh. But I do support filibustering extra-legal assassinations of Americans by the executive branch, you know, and I do support it when, you know, the libertarians are opposed to things like getting groped by the TSA when you go to the airport. So there are certain issues
marijuana.
I think that the libertarians can make great headway on and push a wedge straight down the middle of the Republican Party in the process of doing that. And I think that people who are more on the left should have kind of more of a nuanced view of that instead of just sort of this black and white, like, oh, libertarians are bad. Well, libertarians are wrong about a lot of things, but they also are, the phrase I like to use is occasionally useful.
Useful to Republicans. I mean, they've been kind of marginalized. They were big in the 80s and 90s. A lot of the ideology of the Republican Party came from them.
Well, they're making a comeback because of the whole anti-war plank. Ron Paul running for president.
That's kind of weird because, that doesn't fit with the rest of the Republican.
And the neocons can't stand it. They were trying to suppress their vote and rig the the delegate vote count.
Well, they've been trying to shut them up. Buchanan used to be, you know, big right-wing guy, but then the corporates didn't like him because he didn't like the foreign labor and stuff.
Protectionist.
It's the right isn't... We can divide and conquer them just as effectively as they do it to us.
They're not a homogenous mass.
And should. That's one of the things we should... And we should be pushing through the government as well as outside the government with civil disobedience. I mean, you just can't use one technique all the time.
So I think that people who are on the left should be willing to work with libertarians on those certain issues that where there is some agreement, and at the same time we should be very careful about that strategy because one of the big responses to Rand Paul's filibuster of drone assassinations is, oh well, he's just going to use this as a platform to run for president. And I don't really, as much as I agree with him on certain issues, overall, I don't think that, someone who basically wants to go back to a pre-segregation business model of the government can't tell businesses what to do ever at all, even if it's things like, excluding
pollution,
black people from coming into your diner. I don't think that's a little too pointy white hood for my taste for that to be in the White House. So, yeah, we should be wary of the opportunism and the the using that wedge issue to further his own career, and we should be critical of that. But I think we should also
You do have an example with the smart meters, with the the right, some the people that don't like people messing with their houses. A lot of kind of right wing libertarian types are involved in that, as well as new age hippie types. I mean, Josh Hart's got a very strange coalition. You've seen them, right? The smart meters people.
I've seen them, man. They're strange people. It's pretty.
It's a mixture. Well, Occupy was a mixture too. You know, you had the moderates and the anarchists and the smart meters. You got the libertarians.
Seem a little
more
tinfoil hat than the whole Occupy thing. Like the Occupy thing, I thought was
but it might be true though. And it's little kids that are going to suffer from it.
Yeah, it's true. This is a good point. So if it's true.
And it's a law, you know, if they passed a law in Capitolia, the sheriffs weren't doing anything about it, you know. They're just letting them put the smart meter, and that's against the law, too, for them to trespass, but the sheriffs wouldn't stop them.
You know, in a way, I really felt like the smart meter thing was maybe had less to do with, somebody who's actually going to get a tumor from it or something like that. Well, let's say right up front, I'm not familiar enough with the science around that to speak authoritatively on it. But just going from my political instincts, it really kind of looked to me like a thing, like people felt really disempowered by it because here's this big PG&E is imposing this thing onto everybody, and nobody really gets to have a say as to whether or not they think this would be a good system to have to live under. And so
you can see where the libertarians don't like that, and they're walking right onto your property and putting shit on your house. You can see where they don't buy into that at all.
Right. Next thing you know, they're going to come and take my guns.
They're working on that now.
That's
these Manchurian candidates going ballistic on people.
That's pretty conspiratorial. It could be. I tend to think more of it as being something that's engineered, just in terms of, you get the culture just totally amped up on this whole concept of vigilantism. I mean, it's what all the Hollywood movies are about.
Yeah.
Is like glorifying, being the hero by going out and kicking some ass. And then at the same time, completely decimating the working class economy, it's like the study that came out in England that whenever a conservative government was in power, they found that the depression rates skyrocketed, the suicide rates skyrocketed. A lot of these,
because they screw up the economy.
Lone wolf shooter things. I think a big part of what's motivating people is basically suicide by cop.
Yeah, there's that.
It's a good way to end your life and get some notoriety in the process. I mean, someone who never got credit for anything they ever did in their life, kind of thing. You know. So not that I'm trying to rationalize it or, you know what I'm saying. I mean, there's kind of a conflated thing that this went on with 9/11 that if you tried to say that, 9/11, put it in some kind of context of, this is what's actually motivating these people to, it's not some mystery what motivated, Osama bin Laden to do that. He wrote all about it.
Yeah.
He wrote letters to the United States.
Yeah. He did it. I mean, he did that. But, and I'm sure the CIA knew he was going to do it. And why didn't we stop it?
Right. Well, and he's another one of those guys that.
You don't think 9/11 was an inside job?
Oh, absolutely. I think
because Building 7. I mean, nobody. I mean, I don't know enough about building engineering to know if the planes would hitting the building is enough to knock it down. But Building 7. I mean, I know
just
that
sort of spontaneously
it collapsed in
on
his
its
footprint.
Own?
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, right. if a boiler blown up, it would just be a section would be blown out. you know, not collapsing inward perfectly.
And then it would collapse over.
That's very difficult to do. I mean,
tipping over, right.
They pay big money to professionals to do that. You know, you have to get time the explosions just the right order to knock out the support columns and stuff.
Right, right. So it doesn't damage adjacent buildings.
And you never saw Building 7 on the news all that much. You had to go on the internet and actually see, what the fuck? You know, a friend of mine, you know, I watched Free Speech. He was telling me, I watched Free Speech. I never heard of Building 7. And we should go look it up. She got really quiet after that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's no other explanation for that. That's an inside job. So that means treason.
Right.
By our own military, the corporation, these people are criminals of the highest sort.
The neoconservative think tank, the Project for a New American Century, you know, published a document years before, you know, about this whole, like, grand chess game strategy to take over the Middle East. And that was one of the things they said was, like, well, we don't think we're going to be able to sell this to the public unless there's a Pearl Harbor type of event.
That's exactly right.
And,
Reichstag fire.
And this is one of those things where people are like, oh, now you're going off into Alex Jones tinfoil hat conspiracy land.
What about Building 7? You don't need a tinfoil hat to see that that's...
Well, and I got one for you, the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which is well documented.
Yeah, same thing.
Any historian will tell you was a complete hoax and was used as a pretext to get us into the Vietnam War.
Exactly right.
So it's been done before.
Yeah, same thing.
It's not like...
What was it? Same thing in World War II.
With the Reichstag
For the Germans, and there was also something to bring us in on the side of England. There was some ship that went down that I think England might have knocked down and blamed on the Nazis.
Well, and wasn't... I don't claim to be an expert on this, but what I've heard is the with Pearl Harbor, there was something about how...
They should
the
have known.
The U.S. had intelligence ahead of time. They allowed it to happen. They put out...
makes sense.
The fleet of ships that were like the old ships they were about to decommission anyway and let the Japanese bomb that.
Yeah, I don't think they were the best ship. Battleships are obsolete. As aircraft carriers, they're still valid.
Right.
Battleships are pointless.
Right, right.
And overexpensive.
So anyway, it's not like there's no precedent.
I know. Well, look at... There was, in Building 7, there was like 150 SEC, you know, corporate investigations that disappeared. In the Pentagon, in that section that blew up, there was like, you know what, $10 trillion in cost overruns.
CIA have offices in Building 7.
Thing.
Right,
yeah, exactly right.
So it's
and there was also, there was just before. A few days before, there was like $10 trillion in cost overruns in the Pentagon or something. And there was all this evidence in one of those rooms that got destroyed by the missile that took out the Pentagon, because apparently a plane would not have been able to get through a hardened building like that.
They were doing a war game exercise for a plane hijacking scenario.
Yeah, and they were telling people, don't fly on this day. I mean, it's just... And people who were embarrassing were assigned to the building, you know, that ended up dying when it fell and stuff. It's
well, you know, I thought was real fishy about 9/11? And I have, unlike a lot of Americans, a long memory. And I remember pretty clearly how the television footage went on this day, and I guess there's a 9/11 archive that you can actually watch. It's all, you know, there was, people did what I thought to do like a week later is, oh, we should have stuck a tape in the VCR, because we actually had VCRs back then, and there's people that actually did that and just recorded everything, and so the 9/11 coverage, when it first happened, it seemed like the media was really chaotic. And didn't really know what to do next, and was saying that like they hadn't informed all the news media ahead of time or whatever this thing was going to happen, and so they weren't really on narrative very much. But then about halfway through the day, there was this shift. I remember the way that the shift happened was there were two things that I saw. Was one was, I think it was CNN got Oliver North and Pat Robertson to give their expert. I was like, oh, here are the two most qualified people in the freaking world. Okay, Pat Robertson, who's a con artist snake oil salesman, right? And Oliver North, who's been, like, indicted...
Treason.
Of treason. Yeah. And you know...
Although he did get a higher price from the Iranians than it was worth.
Oh, there you
so
go.
So he did need to burn him a little bit.
You know, how did that go? It was, tell the... the hostage takers to hold the hostages till after the election so Ronald Reagan could get elected, because
October
they blamed
surprise
on Jimmy Carter, and then, oh, because, hey, these people are really dangerous and we're really opposed to this, the spooky
Iranian
regime.
Yeah, they cut
regime.
A deal.
So what are we going to do? We're going to give these people weapons in exchange. oh, wow, you're really dangerous. You took all our embassy guys hostage. Here, have some guns and artillery and stuff like that. Here you go.
Yeah, that's right? Treason. And then, they were cutting a deal outside the normal chain of command.
And then took that money and embezzled it in the drug trade in Central America and yeah. used it to fund their kooky right-wing death squad buddies who were, going around killing ostensibly people who were involved in these, like, armed Marxist insurgent groups, but since they couldn't really catch those people, they figured the easiest thing to do was just to kill off their base of support, which was, rural, agrarian, farm-based economy, people living in villages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's no witnesses. You go out there, there's no media out there to witness this atrocities.
Yeah, but there is documentation of this stuff. We know that in El Salvador, they were putting people in the town oven.
It's horrible.
Which is
our,
like,
tax dollars at work.
There you go, people. Right. Yeah. Woo! Ronald Reagan. Yeah, that guy on the Sentinel board.
And they released the hostages the minute Reagan got
elected. Ronald Reagan as his Facebook status.
Yeah.
His Facebook picture is Ronald Reagan. And it's like, wow, dude, answer for that one. Killing nuns. You like that? Let's go kill some more nuns for Ronald Reagan. Is that what you're into, man? That Law and Order? Wee-hoo! Yeah. Ride 'em, cowboy. Good job, right? And then what did Reagan do? Oh, he deindustrialized the U.S. economy. He
destroyed our economy.
Just completely.
We're living under Reaganomics. This is where it leads.
Still.
It's still voodoo economics.
Even Obama is a Reagan economist.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And he's supposed to be a liberal.
So was Clinton.
Yeah. So, isn't that interesting that the ostensibly liberal Democratic Party is basically...
Carter was conservative financially.
Yeah, yeah.
We haven't had a liberal since what? Kennedy?
Kennedy, right. Hey, even Nixon was to the left of our current crop of politicians in both parties.
That's what I'm saying. It's like Obama's like a moderate Republican.
Nixon, Nixon created the Environmental Protection Agency and OSHA.
He went to China.
Right. Yeah, so there you go. That's what just really dark times we live in.
Yeah, and this is just the beginning. We're headed for a cannibal apocalypse.
And this is why people are like, oh geez, tuning us out and like let's watch American Idol or the Kardashians or something right now. People don't really want to think about.
That's how it happens.
You gotta.
It's because we won't pay attention to it.
You gotta give everybody a silver lining, or something like that.
This could all be. We could do things on a local level. I mean, we could shut down 17. We could say you can't. No car. We could make it harder to use cars in town. We could make a law against using. And all of a sudden, then there would be local jobs because all these fucking Take Back Santa Cruz. They're working over the hill. You can't work in this town, or else they got investments or something.
Totally.
So they're not really local, anyways.
Well, you know what the silver lining
and
is?
Get rid of the fucking oil. If we got rid of cars, that would totally. Then we wouldn't be beholden to the oil companies. We'd have local jobs. We wouldn't need to.
We could come up with solutions to different issues.
Solar power.
Issues all day.
Yeah.
Like the real silver lining is that if people choose to get off their butts, this is you, dear listener, and do something about it, then things will change. They won't change right away. You won't get immediate gratification out of that. You're just going to have to deal with that fact.
But why are you doing it? I know a lot of activists. Some of them, it's just the excitement. Unless it's illegal, they don't even want to do it because it's not exciting.
It's just not exciting, right?
Yeah. And then other ones just want to get their name in the paper and get famous and, the accolades.
So, this is a thing that I think every movement has that kind of hangers-on.
It's why you do it, because you're not getting paid. The other side, right, makes money. What they do, their politics puts huge amounts of money in their politics. The left have to volunteer. We have to do it in our spare time, which is very little in this town, because you've got to work three jobs to be able to live here.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's, there is the activism in this town has gone way down in the past 10, 20 years.
Well, that's a problem on the left, is that on one hand, it's kind of this double-edged sword that a lot of the organizations, are so opposed to capitalism or whatever that they can't come up with a model to run their organization.
They're still in it. I mean,
yeah right.
They complain about it, but they're still, you know, hip deep in it because there's no alternative, and they can't come up with an alternative either.
So, so they don't come up with a way to, you know, make their activism turn over a dollar that people can get paid for all the labor that they're putting into their activism, which leads to burnout after a while because you're not really getting a lot in return.
I wanted to do some activism tokens.
But then the other end of that spectrum is you get these people who are just in it for the money, and you get these really watered down, ineffective, sort of like let's go kiss the politicians' asses kind of group.
Well, you don't want to make it, you don't want to upset them.
I'm thinking about, I'm not going to name names, but I'm thinking about some of the local environmental groups in town that are just sort of this, you know, parlor boudoir bourgeois kind of thing that people can pad their resume with and you know, make a few bucks in the process. And
well, you're not going to get arrested doing that either,
right?
So exactly. It's a safe thing for middle class people to, and feel that they're doing a part, and then and not worry about driving a car and being part of the problem.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's just a rationalization, you know, just, hey, I'm doing something.
Right, yeah.
I don't have to do what I should do because I'm doing something.
Dude, so at least I'm doing something. Yeah. Are you doing something? Most people don't even do anything.
That's true.
So
most
I'm doing something. Hey, it's something.
And then the other issue
something
is
something.
Is that everybody wants to have their own idea. You go to Occupy, everybody had their own idea. You know, nobody wanted to really come together. And
this is true. I think we need better sort of group aggregation strategy.
Yeah, I think we could use some hierarchies and accountability.
I don't know about hierarchy so much, just in terms of like
flexible ones.
Yeah,
I mean, ones where the positions change.
Right,
you know?
Right. As opposed to like a pyramid hierarchy of like, let's take a small elite of people and put them in charge of everybody else. But I do think, I mean, some more thought into the organization of the thing that...
For expertise. I mean, if somebody somebody who knows how to fight the system...
Instead of having like the General Assembly meeting just kind of being this big mishmash free-for-all of like, what's your pet issue? Well, what's yours? Well,
Okay, we're not going to decide to do very little, and then a spinoff group will do something that'll get us all fucked up, you know?
Well, that happens too.
Yep. Because they get frustrated. You know, I didn't leave Occupy because of the anarchists took over the bank. I left it because the moderates were going to cut a deal with the fucking government on the permit thing. You know, it's just, I mean, we don't talk about how the moderates let down Occupy, too.
Oh, right, how they completely undercut.
They co-opted
that whole thing.
Yeah.
And
there was very little protesting going on in our local
one. Everybody else under the bus, like through the more radical people.
Well, they were. I saw people lobbying to not feed the homeless. You know, I mean, they're not doing anything. Why should they get this free food we've been given by the public? But then, you know, the Occupy was doing very little bank protesting, and I think that's why the public was giving them those resources, because they were mad at the banks.
Right.
We should have done much more of that. It wasn't just about a camp.
You know, I kind of sat out Occupy because I was experiencing my own activist burnout from stuff I did previous at the, you know, back when the Iraq War was really going full bore, that sort of thing. I don't really have a lot of firsthand knowledge about the, you know, kind of the internal political maneuvering that went on, but it definitely did seem like, for like the first few months or whatever, that the Santa Cruz group had a lot of motivation and a lot of inspiration to go out.
Did some huge marches in the beginning, yeah.
And these big marches and the video.
The first few days
on YouTube
that
went viral of the people in the bank.
Oh yeah, that went over a quarter million. Like
you can't be a protester and a customer at the same time, which was like you're just pulling that out of your.
That's right.
You know what? And it seems like at some point in time. That got diverted into, I don't know what, trying to defend the camp from raids or something. I don't know what it got diverted into because, like I said, I wasn't really there to see a lot of it firsthand.
Well, a lot of the working groups, you know, people just kind of took them over and they weren't really, you know, like the direct action group wanted to hold hands at the beach, you know, and give medals to the police for not arresting. I know. It's
yeah. So you let the moderate people.
Well, there was a lot of unemployed middle management, you know, and they know how to take over meetings better than the anarchists know how to run, you know, take them over.
Right, this is true.
Because, I mean, when you make meetings are the worst way to make decisions. I mean, like they say, oh, you know, a camel's a horse designed by committee. Because it just, that's what happened to Occupy, because they all fight in the meetings, they don't get along. It's just, it's much better to make your decisions outside a meeting. Meetings are good for getting information or brainstorming.
Right, right.
But
and
not
then you
for
break
making
off
decisions.
Into smaller working groups and make decisions
or,
there,
or even individual decisions, or you could do, you know, a vote of everybody independently, the way we do an election or something, where you're not influenced by somebody that's more articulate.
Since you just said vote, I want to put a plug in for this guy, Christopher Dearhart, who has these voting machines that are really fascinating. I've been to one of his events. And
I've heard of these now.
You know what's fascinating about it is that you get this automatic statistical breakdown of the demographics of everybody in the room and how they're voting. That's, you know, clearly
does Peter know about this?
I've told him, yeah.
What does he have to say?
I've
had Peter on here. He's been doing that computer voting forever, but where is it?
Yeah, he's way into it. That's his
whole thing.
Right,
and then now, but Dearhart's actually doing
Dearhart's
it in groups and stuff.
I know, and I told Peter, like, hey, you should find this guy, and I don't know. I don't know what he went and did with it, but anyway, this Dearhart guy is actually working on implementing it, and he wants to, you know, have like your neighborhood committee be run on these things.
That's interesting, because with computers, we don't really need representatives like we did before computers.
No, we could just do it all.
We could
on
do
the
it ourselves
directly.
Yeah.
You just get on the voting website and see what the issues of the day are, and you could make proposals of different things for people to vote on.
Put your own ballot
and
issues on it.
And so it's interesting. Like, he's aggregated a list of different. Like sort of proposals or principles or things that people would like to see happen based on all these votes that
in small groups
that have been taken from these different groups that have met, and he's actually come up with this big list of things that people would like to see happen that a majority of people at multiple different voting events have endorsed as something that they think is a good idea. And so, I think that's, there's a lot of potential for using the fairly new information technology to be able to, come up with better group decision-making systems. I mean, I'd like to see, it would be interesting to see how... Well, an Occupy General Assembly would work using this kind of technology. I know from what he said, he's been helping not-for-profit organizations implement these voting systems. And, his claim is that one of the organizations was able to sort of get more done in this one meeting than they'd gotten done in like 6 months worth of meetings previous, because you can just see exactly what everybody in the room is thinking and get a demographic breakdown, like the women voted like this, the men voted like this, the people of this income bracket voted like this, the people who like dogs voted like that, and which, is furthers sort of a more in-depth discussion. Well, why did people from this one demographic all vote for this one thing, but then people from this other demographic voted differently? And instead of those dynamics just going unacknowledged, boom, they're right there on the computer screen for everybody to talk about them. The experience that people have had with using these things is that it makes organizations run more smoothly and efficiently.
That's actually pretty very similar to a dating site. You just fill out a form with all your different categories,
right?
And
yeah,
very easy to do. This is not the same thing that Peter's trying to do with his runoffs in case this and that and the other thing.
Oh yeah, I mean
Peter's very
complicated. Peter has all this complex math which is meant to circumvent problems that tend to happen with voting systems that mathematicians have been arguing about in their theoretical,
it's more theoretical kind of
paper for centuries. You know, going back to like Condorcet and the French Revolution and that sort of thing. You know, and the big one being like how to get rid of the spoiler effect which is like, don't vote for Nader because then Bush will win. But yeah. Al Gore doesn't really represent my interest as well as Nader does. But you don't want Bush to win, do you?
That so or that's his that's yeah when Bush effect. Well, I mean when Nader loses, then those votes go into Gore and his will take care of that.
Yeah. Because you're if you're voting for Nader, you're taking
you're helping Bush.
Bush's votes from Gore because you wouldn't have been voting for Bush otherwise. That sort of thing.
And then so the idea that you would vote for Nader instead of Bush is ridiculous.
So the fact that we have elections that produce a spoiler effect is really
it's the two-party system.
Of the fact that the two-party
winner
system,
takes all.
Yeah, and the winner take all, and just we run our elections are rigged to create that effect. It works in the
it creates two parties. It naturally creates two parties.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Well, and it works in the best interest of those two parties. Like, I was endorsing third-party candidates during the 2012 election, and I just got, like, some really viciously attacked, actually. Juvenile ad hominem.
Yeah, what are you going to do? That's what I prefer ballot interest.
You know,
actually,
you know what I'm saying? Anyway, when I was on the internet during the 2012 election by people who were just terrified of Mitt Romney getting in, because and we have to settle for Obama because he's the lesser two evils, blah blah blah, you know, and which it my response to that was that you're living in a freaking dream world if you think Obama's any better than Mitt Romney. He's just a slightly different
I mean, you wouldn't have got this hospital bill from Mitt Romney. I mean,
a few issues here in the gay marriage. I mean, nothing really substantial.
Yeah.
Nothing.
But if there was a Republican in office,
let's clean up Wall Street.
I wouldn't be in the studio right now. I mean, just there is a difference. I feel somewhat.
You don't think so? I think the Democrats.
Obama's a conservative. Bush is a Nazi. You know.
And
Mitt Romney will be worse than. The only thing is that Mitt Romney is probably more of an idiot than Obama, so he won't be able to do much. But then look at George Bush.
Obama,
he was an idiot.
Obama has spread military, U.S. military operations to, Yemen, Pakistan,
Mali. I didn't expect that to change. They'll just kill him if he doesn't. Doesn't let him do that, they'll just kill him. So, I mean, it's what choice does he have?
Yeah, I suppose so.
They killed Kennedy, right?
Right.
He wanted to pull us out of Vietnam, get rid of the CIA. Right. They're not going to allow that kind of thing to happen.
Yeah, I don't really get
it's a delusion to think that the president's really running things.
I don't really get the feeling that he even wants to put a brake on the war machine. Like, the issue of him being assassinated
that's not his primary. He's internalized it
because he just loves to go bomb some people, man.
Well, no, I don't think he's like that. No, I don't think he's like that.
Oh, I think he's all about it.
No, I don't think so.
I think he's all about it.
I don't really know, but I don't think so.
Look at how much the administration, has gone out of the way to defend their drone bombing.
I don't really think a lot of people are like that. It's just
I think Obama. I don't think a lot of people are like that. I think Barack Obama is.
I don't think he enjoys killing innocent people. I don't think. I don't think Bush did either. I think Bush was just an idiot.
They're just indifferent to it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Hitler enjoyed it or somebody. You really have to be bad to enjoy killing innocent. Who enjoys killing innocent people? It's just. I don't know.
He doesn't enjoy killing innocent
people. Some kind
of
psychopath.
He's just happy to know that there's other people out there who enjoy killing innocent people. That'll do his dirty work for him.
It's part of war. I mean, some people are going to die.
Yeah.
There's just no way around it.
This is
even in crime, innocent bystanders get shot. There's no way around it.
Right.
As far as the drones, I wish we had some drones here for Cop Watch because everybody else is scared to do it.
To put cameras in them or something,
put it in a drone. Nobody wants to face the cops,
Well, you're going to get thrown in jail.
That's the thing. Why? An honest cop wouldn't care if somebody was filming them, but in Santa Cruz, they get very upset when you start filming them.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
They went right to his work and said, hey, this guy's out here filming us, and
we
walked by, somebody had filmed a fight, and the cop told the guy that was filming to stop filming, and Brent got, the cop told him, stop filming me and sit down, and then he got a ticket for sitting down,
After the cop told him to sit down.
Yeah, exactly.
Down, right.
Yeah. Ayers.
Well,
bad
that's
cop
one of
Ayers.
Those tickets that it's like they don't even care if it's going to stand up in court. It's just they're putting you through the hassle.
Oh, he lost in court, right, of course, right. In this court. You know, I think it was Volkman.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. So if you get corrupt judges who are, you know, care more about, you know, furthering the city's little cronyistic agenda and repress and harass anybody who stands in your way, then you can go around doing ridiculous stuff and you pretty much count on, you know, the judge will side with you no matter what because you're the city and that other person isn't.
Yeah.
So there you go.
They favor businesses and the government.
On the internet, you know, in New York, they got this stop and frisk.
Yeah.
Right, which is, you know, licensed to just basically set up checkpoints and just mess with as many people as you want. And this guy made an audio recording of his whole interaction with the police on his iPod. And it pretty obviously just blatant extra legal harassment. The cops actually said it was, you know, said he asked him some question at some point in time, like, you know, why are you messing me like this? And the cop actually said, because you're a mutt. The guy was like multi-ethnic, right? Like from, you know, I don't know what, but it's like, you know, mix of
he's trying to incite him to violence so that he can use violence against him.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and that's, they talk about that in the, because they interview former cops and that sort of thing in the same video, and that's one of the things that they talk about, is that's one of their tactics, is that they'll say a bunch of insulting things and try to make you upset so that you'll want to mouth off and yell and kick and scream and do something violent, because then that gives them a pretext to slap that many more charges on you.
And beat you up.
Right.
Now, there are some people that I think might enjoy beating up innocents.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The people join the police force because they want to be able to go around intimidating other people. And get away with it.
And that's why they don't like cameras. No,
That's not everyone.
That's right.
There are cops out there who...
There are good cops. Like Serpico.
Right.
But look what happens to him. You know, the rest of the cops are against him.
Right. Well, and same thing with Christopher Dorner, which is, not to...
Isn't he one of the nutcases that went off here lately?
Well, he was the guy down in Los Angeles that they had the biggest manhunt in the history of the Los Angeles Police Department over this
guy.
He was
shooting
because
cops.
He was trained with, he was shooting other
cops.
Another
military background. Yeah.
Right, all of that. Yeah, you know. So, but that was a situation where, my response to that was, hey, LAPD, you created this monster. You trained him to kill... taught him what your investigation tactics were, and then when he tried to do the right thing and be a Serpico and go to the internal affairs and the ethics oversight and all of that, you just marginalized him and harassed him and that sort of thing. And if they actually had taken this guy seriously and said, okay, wow, you're a patrol cop and you're saying, you know, XYZ is happening, cops going around calling people nigger and beating people up and all of that, maybe this is like a serious problem we need to look into. No, we don't want any sort of scrutiny in what we do. Nobody gets tell us that we're doing anything wrong. And then,
LA cops are horrible. Big city cops, it's impossible to get rid of them. The Oakland cops are in receivership under federal jurisdiction.
Well, they've got the stop and frisk going on up there.
Yeah, you can't fire them. That's the main problem. You can't get rid of them.
From Oakland, who's an indigenous tribal American. Right? Well, not even American. America is imposed on the indigenous people. You know what I'm getting at. He was an Indian.
American. He's an American American.
He's a Turtle Island American. And I thought it was really interesting, and what he said to me was he characterized Oakland as one big reservation. You might as well be on an Indian reservation. You get shakedown everywhere you go, and Yeah, and it's an economic sacrifice zone. And then the rich people all live up in the hills and don't have to deal with all the social problems that go along with poverty. And
well, a lot of our anarchists moved there. I mean, that's where during
that's
Occupy.
Where they all moved?
Well, I mean, during Occupy, you know, they were probably sick of the moderates here as me, and they just all went up to Oakland because it was getting rowdy up there and stuff.
Right, right, yeah. Well, they were the rowdiest Occupy of them all.
And then they came back, and the moderates had changed all the hand signals on.
they couldn't
take over the meetings quite
anymore.
So easily.
Right, right, totally.
They put their own friends on stack, and it was. Yeah, I saw a lot of people walk out of Occupy just because it wasn't. Fair. I mean, their friends would get, you know, on the stack all the time. And
right. There was corruption.
There's corruption in all forms of government, including anarchism. All of them. Because power. And that's the one thing.
Anarchism isn't government.
Well, that's the one thing I didn't know. I did a show on The Last Chance for Anarchistic Government, and I figured consensus isn't even really anarchism. That's new. That's more Quakerism.
Right, right.
But the thing I didn't figure out is that even pretend power will corrupt you.
Well, yeah.
So that's part of why. Because they do. I mean, this is an anarchistically run collective.
Oh, the
Sub Rosa,
you mean?
Yeah, and the bike church.
Right.
I mean, they are effective on a small scale.
Well, you know, there's. I think pretending that there is no hierarchy is a great.
And there's always a hierarchy. Yes, there always is. There's the people that don't come to the meeting.
Right.
Right there, you know. The people that can never come to the meeting, they aren't part of the collective.
Right, right.
And then there's always the more articulate ones in the meeting that tend to steer the meeting in the direction they want it to go.
Right, right.
So you've always got some kind of a hierarchy.
Like, you know, I did all the work, so.
That's the other thing. In the small groups, you got the people that actually do the work, so then it becomes an absolute dictatorship, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to get done unless they do it, and they're going to do it the way they want to, and they don't care what the GA said, you know.
Yeah. So that's a problem.
Of all governments.
Sort of like
all governments have problems.
And it's not really the fault of the person who does all the work and ends up running the group, because they're dealing with the pressure of, okay, like, yeah, sure, like, maybe you want to come to the meeting and object to everything I do or whatever, but when the pavement hits the road, like, who's going to actually get the work done?
That's going to determine what happens.
Yeah.
That's where the power is
in the labor.
Yeah,
exactly,
the executive
right.
for whatever branch
is actually taking who's actually going to take action. So,
well, with that, we're kind of up to almost 2 hours here.
Oh,
we're
great.
into lurch
away.
Yeah, actually,
we dwindled down to
no, we're actually not bad.
We're
for
actually,
listeners.
I know, yeah, people do listen to.
Well, actually, for this show, this is not bad.
Oh,
we normally
good.
Don't do a long. People like talk.
How do you get ratings? Do you get ratings?
I can tell how many people are listening on the internet.
Like right now?
Yeah.
How many people are listening right now?
Well, I mean, just on the internet. I can't tell.
Oh, on the internet. I see.
Yeah.
What's our internet stat? Can you look that up?
It's about right. Five or six.
Five or six people. Hi, five or six people out there.
Well, that could be two people. Some of them two people. So, and then probably double that on the radio.
Okay.
So that's not bad. I mean,
hey,
Robert is the gets the best, and he gets like 13 on a good show.
Whoa, that's... Yeah, you know, it's something. It's better than not talking to anybody at all, so I appreciate the fact that you're willing to listen to...
Well, these are also, you know, the radicals, too, so we have a very select audience. It's like the guy in L.A. says, I'm worth a million listeners.
Right, right, right. So, well, I mean, so what? There hasn't really been a big outreach drive.
It's the gentrification.
Radio. Right.
I mean, it used to be more... I mean, marches used to be bigger in this town 10, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. It's
well, even
it's,
the college campus has been gentrified with, like, the tuition going up. Because, I mean, usually that's, like, a pretty good... you know, target demographic for people who might be inclined to get politicized and get involved in activism.
Yeah, we've had that's from time to time, they'll bring their friends
like,
in and there'll be a lot
like
of
the,
them.
It seems like the campus is a lot more conservative.
They've changed. They've gone, they used to be pass-fail up there, you know, back in the day,
right,
and now
right.
it's grades,
yeah.
and they've gone more towards the business.
Well, you know what I think is really weird is that nobody seems to want to protest the tuition hikes or the...
Well, I think they do that.
Humanities department. Well, I don't... I mean, I suppose it happens. It seems like...
But it happens up there. We don't see it. It's a whole other world.
Right, right. That's another thing. The campus activism isn't...
It's a whole other world.
I've had a problem with in the past and just kind of in general with not really plugging in with what's going on in the town in general.
Because they're only here for a few years
and then
they're gone. So they never really connect with the rest of the...
But anyway, what I was going to say was I think it's kind of weird that, like, The last few times I've seen a big student march, it's been over, like, feminism.
Well, the big Occupy march, I bet a lot of that was students, because there's a whole lot of people I didn't know.
Okay, so that's true. I mean, it just seems like recently, like, all anybody wants to march over is feminism and date rape.
Well, the rape is a big thing, and the prison, there's a new group that showed up at a Huff meeting.
Group?
Well, yeah, there's a few people.
Uh-huh.
They sound like anarchists. I think they're from the university, because there was recently a rape up there.
But didn't that turn out to be a hoax or something?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they want to cover those up. The crime in Santa Cruz,
right?
They like that Take Back Santa Cruz is making all this noise locally on it, because that means more cops and more money to all the locals. But they don't want that heard outside of Santa Cruz. They don't want people that might send their children to the school to find out how bad the crime is.
Tourism.
There'll be less tourism, same thing.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so that's the thing. We should be trumpeting nationally.
They just want to play it up locally. And this is one of the things that I find most disgusting about our local politicians and the whole Take Back Santa Cruz thing is the way that they capitalize on, like, man, if somebody gets murdered around here, it's like politics Christmas for them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, when Shannon Collins got murdered, mm-hmm. they're marching around with their I Am Shannon Collins signs. And I felt like...
Well, there was a homeless guy that got murdered, you know.
Yeah.
They're not defending him.
No,
but what about all the homeless who die from the cold because we got a blanket law?
Right.
You know what I mean? They don't care about that.
No. No. It's only...
It's utterly self-serving.
When cops or upper-middle-class people... And, you know, like, Shannon Collins was, ran a sex toy store...
She was a sex therapist in San Francisco, too,
right.
Which is where the murderer came from. So some people think he may have been stalking her.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe not. And I don't know for sure, because here's the thing. Only Shannon Collins knows this. And Shannon Collins, unfortunately, is now dead. Okay? And so, but maybe... She might not have been somebody who would have signed on enthusiastically to Take Back Santa Cruz's political agenda, okay? And this is what bothers me about the martyrdom of people who are victims of violent crime that the Santa Cruz Neighbors Take Back Santa Cruz political bloc uses to push their agenda is that people can't speak for themselves after they're dead. You know, you can attribute just about any sort of, like, well, they would have wanted us to do X, Y, and Z, and they're not around to say one way or the other whether or not, you know, they would have wanted you to use their name in that regard. And that really bothers me. I find that to be crass and opportunistic.
Same thing with 9/11. They use those thousands of deaths to, you know, fuel their escapades in the Middle East.
It's the shock doctrine, like that book by Naomi Klein. Yeah. You get people, you get a big traumatizing event where everybody's traumatized all at the same time. And
then they give up their leadership. You know, let the leader solve it for us.
Right. And you can push an agenda that people wouldn't have accepted during normal times because, don't you know, we're in a crisis.
All right. Well, I got to cut this off here because I'm a half hour into the next DJ's time. He hasn't here yet, and I have to catch a bus, so... Thanks for coming in.
All right.
This was just somebody that happened to come by the studio.
There you go.
I'm probably going to put it under your real name because everybody knows who you are.
Fine.
Well, your first name.
Jesus.
We've been talking to Colin.
I just have to wake up to cops aiming guns at my head.
Well, actually, no one's gotten busted for.
Oh, good. Well, I won't then.
Yeah, it's
That's
a
fine.
Civil
Don't
penalty.
Bust me. I didn't do it. All I did was talk. That's all I did, man. Okay.
So, brother, 2 years for sleeping. You know.
Yeah, look up the Magic Box Santa Cruz on YouTube, and that's my talk show. And if you like hearing me talk, then I talk some more.
All right, you also show up at local events. You're at the Penny.
All that
sometimes.
Kind of. I'm a man about town, street philosopher, artist, filmmaker, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
We've been talking with Colin on March 19th, 2013. Thanks for listening. Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Pirate Radio. Arr!